Paris is so famous for its must-see museums, massive important obligations like the Louvre and the Orsay. But with about 200 much smaller museums scattered all around the city, you're missing out on some beautiful attractions if you limit yourself to the big famous sites. Emma Jacobs has enjoyed the city's lesser-known gems, and she specializes in how each of them offers something different. They cover a range of quirky and historical topics, topics like the art of the fairgrounds, or carousel horses, or counterfeiting, or the history of medicine. And Emma Jacobs has written a book called The Littler Museums of Paris to take us into these specialty museums. Emma, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm always happy to talk museums.
Yeah, well, me too, and especially in Paris, because Paris is the cultural capital of Europe. You can go there all your life, and many people they seem to go back and back and back to the Louvre and the Orsay and stand in those long lines, and those are great museums, of course, but they neglect the other 200 museums, and this is a great thing that your book has focused on. And I really enjoyed the introduction that explained why Paris has so many museums. You talked about France is more centralized than a lot of countries, at least historically. So a lot of stuff ended up in the capital city.
It did, yes. And a lot was scooped up from the provinces, like the very famous unicorn tapestries that are in the medieval Musée Cluny. They, you know, were hanging in a chateau and then someone wanted them for a national collection and they came to Paris.
And then with the revolution, of course, a lot of these royal collections and treasures that were owned by people who probably had their heads chopped off ended up public.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the Louvre was the palace. You cut off the head of the king and queen and you inherit the greatest collection of art in Europe and you don't have a king to fill the palace anymore. What do? You hang the art in the palace and you open up to the public and voila, you got the Louvre.
Yes. And you know, Napoleon also created what was called the Musée Napoléon in the Louvre and brought art that he captured from all over Europe.
And then Paris is a rich city, so there's just so many collectors and socialites. And it seemed there was a culture of competition almost to show off what you got in your fancy home.
Yeah, it was like if you feel sometimes like if you couldn't make art, what you did was arranged a beautiful house as your legacy full of art and antiques.
One of my favorites is the Musée Jacquemart-André.
Yes, that's a beautiful one. And she, Nelly Jacquemart-André, her husband was involved too, but she outlived him by a very long time. And it's really her vision behind the museum. She is a really fascinating character.
But they just had a lot of money and no kids. And they decided to dedicate it all to collecting all these fancy things. And then now it's part of the heritage of France and we get to all enjoy it.
Yeah. And left very specific instructions, you know, leave it as I arranged it. This is my masterwork.
So in your book, The Littler Museums of Paris, you focus on the small, quirky museums that come with a little extra experience in a lot of cases. Tell us just one favorite little museum that has a particularly fun twist.
The Museum of Hunting and Nature, Chasse et Nature, it doesn't necessarily, you know, sounds super appealing off the bat. It does have kind of the taxidermy and the old antique rifles you'd expect, but it has just been recreated as this very whimsical space where there's modern art integrated with the rest of the collection. And it's an absolutely unique space. There's just nothing else like it, but it's also very Parisian.
What does very Parisian mean?
It's just got this atmosphere and sort of attention to the presentation and...
Does it have a nice cafe?
Gosh. It does not have a cafe.
Because a lot of museums have these charming little cafes, and I always think in Paris that's just such a nice touch.
It is, yes, absolutely.
Now, we're talking 200 museums, and a lot of people go, oh, no, another 20 bucks or another 10 bucks, but you can get that Paris Museum Pass, and if you are just a real avid museum goer, you can get a 5-day-long, complete, unlimited entry to all the sites, and if you sightsee in a busy way, the cool thing is you just pop into whatever, Victor Hugo's house, pop in, Edith Piaf's museum, pop in, you know, the Museum of Music, just pop in, and you just flash your pass and you're there.
Yeah, there's a mix of different organizations running these museums. The 14 city-owned museums are all free unless there's a temporary exhibition going on. In general, these little museums tend to be a lot cheaper than American museums, but also than the larger museums.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Emma Jacobs, and she's taking us on an alternative route through Paris right now, and her book is The Littler Museums of Paris. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. You can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. Caroline's calling from San Diego about some thoughts on museums in Paris. Caroline, thanks for your call.
I just really adore the small museums of Paris and always plan to work in a couple too if I'm lucky enough to get back to Paris.
So what are your favorites?
You know, one that I saw in her book is called the Museum of the 30s. It's stuff from the 1930s, art, appliances, and you would never really, you know, see it called out separately like this in other places. It's a really fabulous, beautiful collection that the city of Paris has put in a separate museum. I don't honestly remember the history. I think that might be in Emma's book. Maybe she can elaborate on that.
I love the way Emma said some of these museums are so Parisian. And when you go to a little museum like that, I imagine you feel like an insider. There's not going to be the mobs of tour groups and so on that fill the Orsay Gallery or the Louvre. And it's just you and a little intimate slice of Parisian culture.
Absolutely. So many of these museums are under visited, and it's just beautiful. You don't often have to wait in lines. You don't have to get your tickets in advance. And they're also just beautiful, elegant collections. And you say, what makes it Parisian? It's like they're put together with a sense of style. And even the older museums, which have these historic collections, like she was mentioning, this Museum of Nature and the Chase, they always add something new, something modern. I was in the Money Museum last year, Museum de Condé, I think it's called, and they had this incredible modern art installation with tapestries and sculpture, and who would have known? In addition, you can learn about the history of minting and building, and how they do metal medallions still to this day. They do honorary medallions, and they have artists there that you have little windows into their workshops for the modern things that they're doing. So there's a real combination of the history and the new, I find, in Paris.
And, you know, I think that's probably because the museums are dedicated not to tourists from the United States or China, but to local people that just want to go out and they change it up so there's something new and fresh. Emma, have you found that in the museums, especially the smaller museums, that they have changing exhibits to keep people coming back?
Yeah, I think they do want to get people in the doors when you have so much competition from so many museums and such a rich cultural landscape. You do need to offer something new and get people to come to this museum that's always been there and maybe they've thought about going, but this is why I go now.
There's a whole different dimension of culture, and it's that lively, modern, ever-changing, designed for the locals. And it gives you sort of an inside track to being a temporary Parisian while you're visiting.
Through the back door, eh, Rick?
That's through the back door. You got it, Caroline. Hey, Caroline, what's another favorite museum of yours, a small museum in Paris?
Oh, you know, this is a very offbeat one. I don't even think I saw it in the book. It's called the Albert Kahn Museum, and it's a combination museum and gardens. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Kahn was a banker, I believe, but he commissioned someone, one of the first color cameras. I think it was either Land or Eastman, a very young man with a camera, to go out. I think it was like around the 1890s, perhaps. And they had a process for doing color photography, which is brand new, and it didn't win the technology. But he has this fabulous collection of photographs of color from an era that you not only do you seldom see photographs, much less color photographs. So if you're interested in that history, it's displayed there. But it also comes along with his garden, because it was also his mansion, his haute particulière, if you will. And while they have a modern museum aspect to it, they have the traditional gardens where he imported or rebuilt little installations from exhibition that he'd been to in Asia. So there's a real mix of things, but it's also maintained in a beautiful French garden style with these little interesting additions of history there.
And I like, Carolyn, that you mentioned it was in the mansion of a wealthy, you know, connoisseur of something. And you see the word hotel, or I don't know the French pronunciation, but Emma, you've described in your book what that actually means, because for a tourist, they think a hotel is a place where people sleep, but it really is a local mansion, right? Can you explain, when we see that word, what we're really talking about?
Yeah. So a hôtel particulier is a sort of urban version of the château in the country. That's sort of how it translates to Paris. And it evolves over the years. You got to imagine when Paris was a lot smaller, that you could build something bigger. And as land gets more and more expensive, you know, you may not have as big a garden courtyard. And tastes evolve, but you tend to have the sort of entryway in the front and then the body of the house and the garden behind.
It's an added dimension of any of so many small museums is it's in a beautiful house, one of these chateaus in the big city. And it's just another reason to check out these small hotel, small museums. Caroline, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Rick.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Emma Jacobs, and her book is The Littler Museums of Paris, an illustrated guide to the city's hidden gems. And Wes is on the line from Covington in Kentucky. Wes, thanks for your call.
Rick, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My wife and I are planning a trip to Paris. We are off-season travelers, and we're taking our six-year-old with us. And this will be our first time in Paris, and it will be his first trip to Europe that he's aware of. We previously took him to Italy, but he was about 16 months old, so he doesn't remember that. Mm. We have plans to go to, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, so I apologize, the Jardin d'Acclimation or something, the amusement park.
Oh, d'Acclimation, yeah.
So, Wes, you're going with a six-year-old.
Correct.
Emma, what are a couple of museums that come to mind for you if you were taking a six-year-old around for the museums of Paris?
So, yes, there are a lot. And I think what's nice about them is a lot of them offer something for kids and adults. There is the Paleontology Gallery, which is laid out, you know, much as it would have been 100 years ago. So it's really fun to walk around in kind of a quirky layout. But
so paleontology,
it's just filled
what
with skeletons.
Skeletons, prehistoric animals, or what do you call that?
Yeah, it's filled with fossils, but also skeletons of all different types of species with their, you know, original labels that were written 100 years ago. I think it's really fun for adults as well as for kids.
Also, there's museums that come with a little extra twist, like the Museum of Magic. In your book, you mentioned it starts out with a magic performance. And of course, there's no language barrier when you're taking kids to see magic tricks.
Yeah, for sure. And the other one that kids can do activities and go on rides, actually, is the Museum of Fairground Arts, which has a couple of carousels and some very old fairground games that you can play.
And those antique carousels are just a delight.
They really are, yeah.
So, Wes, that might be something to keep in mind. The Museum of Fairground Arts. Is this a museum where you've got to have a reservation to go to it?
Yes, it's a tour. They don't let you loose.
Sometimes if there's in small museums, they're likely to have everything in French, but they have a little folder at the door when you pay for your ticket that gives you an English translation of all the exhibits, and that is really worth asking for.
And I think they do English language tours during the summer, possibly not in the off season, but during the summer.
Hey, Wes, have a good time with your six-year-old. That's great that you're going together.
All right, thanks very much.
Emma Jacobs is showing us an intimate side of Paris that most visitors will never get a chance to see right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Scattered across the city are about 200 smaller museums and curiosity galleries, often run by artists and eccentric collectors. Emma includes images from her reporter's sketchbook in her book, The Littler Museums of Paris. Joshua's listening in from Evanston, Illinois, and writes that he was in Paris just a few months before the pandemic shut things down. Joshua, what kind of smaller, out-of-the-way sites did you get to see?
On a Sunday afternoon, I decided to take a, I actually took a little trip outside of Paris, about 14 miles or so, to visit the Villa Savoy, the kind of masterpiece of Le Corbusier, so in Poissy. And it's a pretty fantastic little museum. And there's also an architectural walk there in the town as well. You kind of walk through an abbey to get to the house itself. So it's a really fantastic way to spend the afternoon. And it was the first Sunday of the month, so it was free as well. So I guess on the first Sundays of the month, the museums there are free. So
was it particularly crowded because of that, or was it a museum that doesn't have a crowd concern?
It wasn't that crowded. No, there were a few people there. I think mostly, you know, architecture buffs. But no, there was no line or anything to get in. So it was actually quite comfortable walking around. I think there were audio guides as well, but I just had they handed you a little pamphlet with some background information on the house and it's just kind of a self-guided tour of the house and the grounds.
That's great. Hey, Emma, if you're interested in modern architecture, you know, people have Le Corbusier in mind when they go to France. But what are some ways that you enjoy checking out modern architecture in Paris?
So the Museum of the 1930s, which was mentioned earlier, that is in a suburb called Billancourt. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of a place for a lot of experimentation of architects during his period. They were sort of free to make these houses in these new neighborhoods the way they wanted to make them. Mm-hmm. And there's some models, architectural models there, and some ways to learn about that period. Le Corbusier's own home, which was actually an apartment in a building he built, is also a museum.
Hmm. Well, that's good to know. Joshua, thanks for your call.
No problem. Thank you.
Take care. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Emma Jacobs, and her book is The Littler Museums of Paris, talking about the 200 museums that people overlook when they go to the Louvre and the Orsay and nothing else. Emma, when you think about the museums, the small museums of Paris, I love the ones that have a little bit of hands-on or a little bit of experience along with seeing the exhibits. Let's talk just for a sec about those. The Museum of Music, for instance, it comes with concerts on the original historic instruments, doesn't it?
Yeah, a combination of the original instruments and sometimes replicas, because sometimes the replicas can sound better than those very old instruments.
Sure.
But there's a performance almost every day in one of the galleries, some type of instrument.
And I love a museum that lets you capture, it's like a sneak snapshot of a great creative person's world. And I'm thinking of the museum at Montmartre. You know, the hill with the Sacré-Cœur church and all the artists in the streets and so on. You know, there's a lot of artists that worked on Montmartre, and they had their houses built to let a lot of light in and so on. You can picture this classic Parisian artist there, you know, enjoying the light, and he's got his palette and his easel, and it's just, I feel like I'm a voyeur into history and culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Emma, let's just finish with, as you did your research for your book, which museum did you write up that you thought, this is going to make people so happy that they have my book and they wouldn't know about it otherwise?
I think the Phono Museum is fantastic, and that may be because I'm an audio person, but it is a little private collection that was turned into a museum near Pigalle, and it's a museum of the history of sound recording and has just this wild collection of these giant old music boxes and gramophones and phonographs in all sorts of colors and shapes, and they will play them for you, which, you know, would not really be best practice in a more formal museum setting.
But
you can watch them play, you know, wax cylinders and things you just would never get to see anywhere else.
Emma Jacobs, thanks so much for the work you've done putting this book together and sharing with us the Littler Museums of Paris.
Thank you. It's been great to talk with you.
An unnamed salon orchestra on a 1920 Edison phonograph recording from the collection at the Phono Gallery in Paris. Emma Jacobs has more about the Littler Museums of Paris in her book with that same title and on her website, emmaatlarge.com. 877-333-7425 is our phone number as we head a little southeast from the city for the sensory delights of Burgundy. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.